Welcome once again to our program, beginning a new series called Decoding Angels and Demons, a popular novel and movie that in so many ways speaks errors about the Catholic Church. So our guest in this series, as so often, is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar, where the Shamrock intersects the streets. This new series has been chosen because we want to try really hard to correct several misconceptions regarding the Catholic Church and even about Christianity and its teachings. So we're going to begin. Ron, let's ask ourselves, or ask you, because I know you spent time reading the whole book, I think 569 pages. Okay. Well, what is the book, Angels and Demons, that has been quite popular?
Well, unlike the Da Vinci Code, which we of course did a series on that too, I couldn't find much written from a Catholic perspective defending the Church from Brown's false claims about the Catholic Church. Therefore, I will have to rely more on my own impressions than I did in that particular series. There were a lot of books and articles written trying to correct some of the mistakes, the doctrinal errors that...
In Da Vinci Code.
In Da Vinci Code, yes.
Right, not nearly as many...
Considering
Angels and Demons by Dan Brown, the same author.
And in all fairness, I didn't find Angels and Demons nearly as anti-Catholic as is his Da Vinci Code. However, as with the Da Vinci, I found the book extremely tedious, even boring. But I believe that to criticize a book, one should have to read it. And as you said a while ago, in other words, I don't want to write or simply rely on the opinions of others, so I endured all 569 pages of which describe events that occurred in just a 24-hour period.
In the novel.
Yes. To get to the book, Angels and Demons is a best-selling mystery novel written by Dan Brown that was published in 2000. It was his first novel featuring Robert Langdon, a Harvard symbiologist. That's not a real profession, but Brown made that up. Contrary to a widespread misconception, the Da Vinci Code, on which we did a series, as I said a while ago, was not the first book by Brown featuring Langdon. One source states that the plot involved the quest to, quote, uncover the mysteries of a secret society called the Illuminati, and to unravel a plot to annihilate Vatican City using destructive antimatter, end of quote. The book plays up the old idea of a historical conflict between science and religion, particularly that between a secret society called the Illuminati and the Roman Catholic Church. The same source that I quoted says that, quote, it also shares many stylistic elements with its sequel.
Meaning
the Da Vinci Code. Such as conspiracies of secret societies, a single-day time frame in the Catholic Church, ancient history, architecture, and symbolism are also heavily referenced throughout the book. End of quote. And as I said a while ago, the book was made into a movie and released on May the 15th, 2009. Although I understand that the events portrayed in the movie were set after the events of the Da Vinci Code, which had been released in 2006.
But actually the book was written sometime before the Da Vinci Code.
Yes.
Okay.
We will identify many errors that others have found with the book, but we won't try to explain the reasons for most of these, certainly not in any detail, because this would take far too long. Instead, our focus will be on errors in the book dealing with science and religion, especially those that deal with the Catholic religion. I think that it's appropriate to focus on the alleged war between science and religion, because it's the main theme of the novel and the movie. Nonetheless, I think that it is important to at least identify some of the major errors in the book, other than those that deal with science and religion, because many people take what Brown says in the novel as the gospel truth. He makes a similar statement at the beginning of both of his novels, which states in the Da Vinci Code that, quote, all descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate, end of quote. And it appears that many readers of Angels and Demons, as with the Da Vinci Code, believe it to be historically, artistically, religiously, and theologically accurate, while in fact, of course, they are not.
And some of them are minor, but some of them are major.
Yes. And the way I kind of look at it, people who are in error on minor things consistently are almost always going to be in error on the big things.
Well, it's a good point to remember. And I think the heart of the matter is, because Dan Brown starts out, as you say, both the Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons with this quote that you read, all descriptions of artwork, architecture, document, secret rituals in this novel are accurate. And we spent so much time on the Da Vinci Code showing how innumerable things were erroneous in all of those areas, and particularly about statements of what the Catholic Church taught or believed or history and the like. Well, so would you say that this is the same problem that we faced in the Da Vinci Code, in Angels and Demons?
Yes, I think it is. Although Angels and Demons is a work of fiction, a lot of people believe that the events and facts described therein are true.
Well, no, pardon me, but Da Vinci Code was a work of fiction too.
Yes.
All right.
There are a lot of similarities between the two stories. The main character is the same, Harvard symbologist Robert Langdon. He's played by Tom Hanks in both movies. One source says that the backdrop of both stories is, quote, once again a secretive Catholic Church, which brutally suppresses those who threaten its power, especially those who claim access to knowledge, which is not church sanctioned, end of quote. In the Da Vinci Code, the threat to the church came from Langdon's rediscovery of a secret society that, as one source says, had, quote, preserved a true, radically different account of the lives of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. In Angels and Demons, the threat comes from an ancient secret society of scientists known as the Illuminati, end of quote. This source goes on to say, quote, in both stories, Langdon and a female companion race across Europe on a treasure hunt, following clues hidden in art treasures, churches, and catacombs, pursued by ruthless killers, and of course, find their goal just in the nick of time, end of quote. Both novels have unfortunately been perceived by the general public to be plausible and credible alternate history. That is, as potentially true, albeit in novel form. However, as I said earlier, I didn't find Angels and Demons to be quite as anti-Catholic as the Da Vinci Code, because the latter directly attacks fundamental Catholic doctrines related to Jesus Christ, whereas the Angels and Demons attacks they were more historical in nature rather than doctrinal.
Okay. Good distinction. If Angels and Demons doesn't attack Catholic doctrine as directly as does the Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown, in what sense is it a threat to people's faith?
I believe it is a threat to the faith of Catholics because Brown tries to undermine the historical credibility of the Church. The book is simply full of historical errors. One that deal with architecture, art, and artists, and above all with scientists and science. Unfortunately, millions of people are either ignorant of history or they are gullible and will believe about anything that titillates their senses or entertains their imaginations. Therefore, they accept as a gospel truth what Brown says about hundreds of facts, many of which are simply not true.
And of course, the big problem again is he starts each novel with saying that these facts that he's quoting are accurate. That puts him in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with the book, at least as I see it, that he claims, Brown claims, to be historically accurate, as he did, of course, in his book, The Da Vinci Code, and that the facts described in the novel are true when often they're simply not. And as we said during our series on that novel, that is The Da Vinci Code, many historical fiction writers, they take some liberties with facts, what we might call, you know, poetic license. And the intent of those who take such liberties is usually not malicious, but rather is often intended to help the plot flow or to help facilitate character development. In other words, the historical background has changed a little to help make the story, you know, more interesting. Perhaps one couldn't find a fault with this if Brown didn't claim in the author's note that, and this is from Angels and Demons, that, quote, all works of art, tombs, tunnels, and architecture in Rome are entirely factual, as are their exact locations. They can still be seen today. The Brotherhood of the Illuminati is also factual, end of quote. That's written, you know, right up, I think, on about the second page of the book before they actually get into the novel. Several books have been written by experts in various fields who have detected literally hundreds of errors of a factual nature in the novel. As I said, I haven't found any that Catholics have written, you know, to set the record straight, but I did find a number of other books written by other scholars to do so.
But we will try to also point out in the series where he really errs in statements about the Catholic Church.
Yes, and he makes errors in a lot of other areas, and we're going to look a little bit at that. But our main focus will be on the erroneous claims that Brown makes in regard to the Catholic Church and science. His claims are just the opposite of the truth. And keep in mind that, as with the Da Vinci Code, Brown has an ideological agenda to promote in Angels and Demons. He has the goal to undermine people's faith in the Christian religion first, then to convert them to his brand of New Age or some other sort of offbeat religion. And we'll try to prove that later on in the series.
Okay, Ron, can you give us a brief summary of this book that you took the time and effort to read of 569 pages called Angels and Demons?
The plot follows Harvard symbologist Robert Langdon as he tries to stop what seems to be the Illuminati, a legendary secret society, from destroying Vatican City with the newly discovered power of antimatter. That's basically, in a nutshell, the
book. Okay. Well, since it's the nutshell summary, how about explaining a little bit about the meaning of Illuminati and antimatter? I'm sure those two words aren't familiar to many of us.
The term Illuminati, which is the plural of Latin, means enlightened. And one source says that the name refers to several groups, both historical and modern, and both real and fictitious. More specifically, it refers to the German-Bavarian Illuminati, a secret society that existed during the 18th century Enlightenment era, supposedly founded in May the 1st, 1776, by a man by the name of Adam Weishaupt, who was the first lay professor of canon law at the University of Ingolstadt. The movement was made up largely of freethinkers who held that beliefs should be formed on the basis of science, logic, and reason, and not on authority or tradition or any other dogma, especially religious ones, and most especially those of the Catholic Church. Some writers have maintained over the centuries that the Illuminati conspired to infiltrate and overthrow the governments of many European states, some even claiming that it was behind the French Revolution. I don't want to get into the, you know, the
sure.
that debate, but its members have often been associated with another secret society, the Freemasons. Although many members of the Illuminati were Freemasons, but Brown is wrong when he claims they merged into a single unit. Moreover, his claims that Galileo founded the Illuminati in the 1500s as a secret society of scientists to oppose the Catholic Church, that's absolutely ridiculous. And we're going to spend some
because
time on that.
Because, as you say, the group didn't start in Bavaria till a famous date, 1776.
Right.
Okay.
And we'll refute that claim about the Galileo affair in some later sessions in this series.
Okay, one easy way to remember about Illuminati, as you explained, it means the illumined ones are those who, as you said, are enlightened.
Yes.
Okay.
One source claims that in modern times, the Illuminati is also used to refer to a purported conspiratorial organization which acts as a shadowy power behind the throne, I'm quoting here, allegedly controlling world affairs through present-day governments and corporations, usually as a modern incarnation or continuation of the Bavarian Illuminati. Many conspiracy theorists believe the Illuminati are the masterminds behind events that will lead to the establishment of a new world order, end of quote. It's my understanding from reading some sources that Brown is one of these conspiratorial kind of persons. He believes that there's a worldwide conspiracy to some secret group to take over and run the world.
Okay. Well, so much for the Illuminati, or the illumined, or the enlightened. What about, how do you pronounce that, antimatter or antimatter?
Oh, antimatter.
Antimatter, so against matter.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that's a pretty scientific and complex topic, the little bit I read about it. In strictly lay terms, and that's all I understand myself, matter means the material or the stuff or the substance something is made of. In atomic theory, it is, I'll quote a definition of it, quote, a theory that postulates a basic, generic, and indivisible unit of matter, usually atoms, then protons, neutrons, and electrons, and currently quarks and leptons, end of quote. In other words, matter is composed of atoms and subatomic particles, and some scientists have visualized the atomic arrangement of particles as miniature solar systems. On the other hand, antimatter has been defined as that which, quote, is composed of the counterparts of ordinary matter, such as antiprotons instead of protons, and positrons instead of electrons. One expert says that in particle physics, quote, antimatter is the extension of the concept of the antiparticle to matter, where antimatter is composed of antiparticles in the same way that normal matter is composed of particles, end of quote. Then he goes on to give an example. An anti-electron, that is a positron, an electron with a positive charge, and an anti-proton, a proton with a negative charge, would form an anti-hydrogen atom in the same way that an electron and proton form a normal matter hydrogen atom. End of quote. And he concludes by saying, we're going to make a point with this.
Okay.
He concludes by saying, quote, mixing matter and antimatter would lead to the annihilation of both, in the same way that mixing antiparticles and particles does. This giving rise to a high energy photons at gamma rays or other particle antiparticle pairs, end of quote. Now, let's put it in other words. Mixing the two would release a tremendous amount of energy, antimatter and matter, a tremendous amount of energy in an uncontrolled way, an explosion, and in a controlled way, perhaps a source of energy, and I might add weapons of war. Another source states that, quote, the description of antimatter in the story Angels and Demons suggests that a controversial, new, dangerous, and helpful for addressing the world's energy problems. And I might add also the development of awesome weapons. And as we shall see, the enemies of the church intend to blow up the Vatican with an antimatter bomb.
Okay, that's pretty technical. to follow just hearing it. So don't be discouraged, our audience. If you follow it, you have a scientific mind, fine, but it's not necessary.
Well, it's just the idea that this antimatter should come in contact with matter, then they would annihilate each other, and in that annihilation process would lead a tremendous amount of
something
energy.
Something even more powerful than nuclear bomb.
At least as equally as powerful.
Okay. Well, now that you've talked about Illuminati, the illumined ones, or the enlightened ones, and antimatter, that coming together of matter and antimatter, which would make a tremendous explosion. Let's go back to the summary again.
Well, the story begins with CERN, C-E-R-N, acronym, CERN director Maximilian Kohler, when he discovers one of the facility's top physicists, a man by the name of Leonardo Vetra, was murdered in his private laboratory. Vetra also happens to be a Catholic priest. His chest is branded with a symbol, an anagram of the word Illuminati. An anagram has been defined as, quote, a typographical design or art form that may be read as one or more words, not only in its form as presented, but also from another viewpoint, direction, or orientation, end of quote. Some of the anagrams, you read it one way, it says the same thing. Read it back the other way, it says the same thing.
Okay.
Or others would be, you look at it from the top, it looks the same. You look at it from the bottom, it looks the same. Those are just, there's all different kinds of ambigrams.
Ambigram.
Yes.
I don't believe I've heard that word before.
Well, I don't know whether it's one of Brown's inventions or not.
Sure.
Moreover, Vetra's eye has been cut out and is missing. We find out that he has been killed by an assassin.
Assassin.
Well, I suppose our word assassin comes from assassin, which is, I supposedly, is an Arabic word.
All right.
Who is a killer hired by a man who goes by the name of Janus, an alleged member of the Illuminati. The assassin is a Middle Eastern Muslim who displays a sadistic lust for women throughout the story. He severed the eye of Vetra to use to put up next to some kind of a device that detects eye, you know, for a lock, to unlock a door. There are devices like that, you know, where you look and everybody's eye is different, and so it takes a picture of the eye, and if it's the right one, then of course it'll open the door. There's some, I think, they use fingerprints, and there's different kinds, you know, that they have for security reasons. So he cuts the guy's eye out so he can take the eye and put it up there once he gets to the lab open the door so he can get into the lab to steal the antimatter.
Okay.
As we shall see, he not only murders Vetra, but he also murders four papabili as well. We'll find out what papabili is later on. These are, of course, candidates for the papacy.
Okay.
Instead of calling the police, after Kohler finds this murdered priest, he searched the internet. He searched the internet to locate an expert on the Illuminati. Of course, he finds our hero, Robert Langdon, and he contacts him over in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where Harvard's located, and has him flown to CERN's facilities in Geneva from Boston in an X-33 in about an hour's time. Although there was an actual X-33, an experimental supersonic aircraft, Brown's version is strictly a figment of his imagination. After surveying the murder scene, Langdon concludes that the symbol appears to be authentic. See, he's an expert, you know, a symbologist.
Okay.
That the secret society that had long thought to be extinct seems to have resurfaced. To assist Langdon, Kohler calls Vetra's adopted daughter, Vittoria, to the scene. And she had assisted her foster father with his research. She wasn't his natural daughter. He supposedly had a platonic affair with a nun back in his early days in the priesthood. Not an actual, you know, consummated relationship. And so to he adopts this girl so that she can, in fact, I think she went under artificial, yes.
Insemination.
The nun had artificial insemination so she could, they could have a child together, so to speak.
And supposedly not breaking their vow of chastity.
Yes. In other words, he could provide the seed, she provide the egg, and then the egg would be planted in her uterus and then her fallopian tube, and then, of course, they would have this daughter who would be adopted by both of them as a foster daughter. That'll be significant later on, that little comment.
Sure.
During the investigation, Vittoria revealed that the Illuminati had also stolen a canister containing a quarter of a gram of antimatter that was believed to contain the destructive potential of a small nuclear weapon, a potential that would be unleashed if it contacted any form of normal matter. In other words, it was suspended in this canister in a way by some kind of magnetic something or another, so it wouldn't touch matter on the side. Because, in other words, it was kind of floating in the middle of this canister. And some kind of magnetic things that Vittoria had invented was keeping that little, a hundredth of a gram or whatever, or a quarter of a gram. That's very little. That's a very tiny little drop, you know. But it supposedly possessed enough energy. Packed into it, that if the antimatter would hit the side of the canister, something would happen, in other words, to the magnetic field, that it would blow up with a tremendous explosion. In fact, an explosion would be so big it'd blow the whole Vatican to pieces.
Okay, Ron, we're down to 3 minutes, so obviously we can't do the whole summary right now, so try to find a place where we can say continued. Come back for the next thrilling example or episode.
Well, the problem was that if the canister lost its electrical supply, it would automatically switch to its backup battery, which would provide power for only 24 hours. So okay. That's when the time starts. The time is stolen, and of course it's separated from the normal power strip. Then, of course, the backup battery switches in, and it only is going to last for 24 hours. So, also, I got to say this real quickly. A message was found that claimed that the Illuminati had placed the stolen canister somewhere in Vatican City, so that the search for the hidden canister was on before it could blow up the center of Catholicism. And I guess by a stretch of the imagination, one could call Angels and Demons pro-Catholic novel, because Langdon is trying to save the Vatican from destruction. But as we shall see, in most other respects, the novel is extremely anti-Catholic. In fact, it is purposely anti-Catholic, as we'll demonstrate. And Kohler has Langdon and Vittoria flown at once to Vatican City in the X-33 in about 30 minutes or something like that.
Okay. Well, Ron, I think we're going to stop there. Thank you for your wonderful preparation. We'd ask you to tune in to get the rest of the story as we proceed with Angels and Demons. To our radio audience, we say may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.